But first.
And you didn't write down any puns, right?
No. They won't happen naturally. So if you were looking for
a little bit of that action,
I'm going to disappoint you so badly.
This is the Monty relief.
As soothing as the honey we will be tasting later. Welcome to another Local Hero Spotlight here with CISA, the Bi-Local Folks. Today, we're speaking with Dick Connor of Red Barn Honey Company in Northampton. Now, full disclosure, I used to buy this honey all the time at the market down the street from my house so I could pick it up on my way back home from work. What's bee life like in the winter?
Oh, bee life
for all of us who have forgotten.
In the winter, okay. Well, honeybees are pretty quiet in the winter. There's not much activity in the hive. Well, not much that you can see. The bees, some people refer to it as hibernating. I'm not a biologist, but it's not technically hibernating. The bees go into kind of a state of torpor and they form a cluster. So they share their body heat and the bees produce heat by vibrating their wing muscles. Okay, so they're using honey, which is a carbohydrate, so that's kind of like their fuel source. Think of that as their fuel source for the winter to keep the colony warm. So honeybees consume honey, vibrate their wing muscles, produce heat, and in that cluster, and the bees kind of rotate. So the ones in the outside of the cluster gradually move to the center, and the ones in the middle who are warmer move back out. So yeah, that's what they do to make it through the winter.
So if the bees need honey in the winter or fuel, is there a time that you stop taking the honey from the hives?
Yeah, sure. So it's important for beekeepers who are harvesting honey to make sure that they leave enough for the bees at the end of the season. Our last harvest is in October. It's the last time we process honey. We're taking that honey off end of September, early October. And we'll check to make sure that the bees, the colony is heavy enough, that the bees have enough honey to survive through the winter. If they don't, then we'll do some supplemental feeding. We'll feed them sugar syrup so that it's not too thin, so there's not adding too much moisture to the hive, and the bees will store that in the comb as a substitute for honey. There are various times throughout the season when beekeepers might feed bees. If you're feeding in the spring for a colony expansion and there's not much nectar available for them yet, you'll feed a thinner syrup. It's a 1-to-1 sugar syrup. In the fall, we feed a 2-to-1 syrup.
So one great thing about local honey is that you actually have your beehives on farms in the local area. So how does that work in the winter since we're focusing on that? Do you recollect the beehives or they stay out in the field?
No, we leave the bees where they are in the field. We do move bees around a little bit in the summertime. We have done some pollination in the valley for farmers that are growing crops that rely on pollinators. So we'll move the bees for that purpose, then move them back to the bee yards where we keep them. But the locations where we have bees right now, we have bees in 9 locations up and down the valley from Montague to Granby and in between. We add some insulation to the hives to give them a little bit of added R value to stay warm in the winter. So we put a piece of insulation up on top of the hive underneath the outer cover.
Did those farmers contact you about bringing bees onto the farm and keeping them there, or was it the other way around?
It's mostly the other way around. In some cases, there's some mutual benefit for the farmers, depending on what they're growing. We have bees at Park Hill Orchard in East Hampton, for example, and they're a fruit farm, obviously. So most of what they grow relies on pollinators. So if they did not have me keeping bees there, chances are they would be hiring in beekeepers to hiring in hives, essentially renting hives for pollination during the bloom period. But we keep bees there and we leave them there year round. And they're, by the way, great collaborators. They sell our honey at their farm stand through the season.
So I have to hear your origin story of how you ended up being a beekeeper.
Well, I've always been interested in nature and the outdoors, and a friend of mine, gosh, let's see, it's probably 18 or 20 years ago now, who was keeping bees, introduced me to it, and I said, oh, that's really cool. I should try that. I'd like to try keeping bees as a hobby. So I started a colony in our backyard. We live kind of close to downtown Northampton, so we really don't have much space, but you don't need a lot of space if you only have one or two hives. So I did it as a hobby for a number of years, and then about 13 years ago, decided to make a life career change and sort of stepped out of the work that I was doing and decided to build this into a sideline business while I was caring for my kids.
Are you keeping bees at your place in Northampton too? Do you keep that honey separate from the stuff you're getting from orchards?
No, I don't have any bees at our home right now. All my bees are on what beekeepers refer to as outyards, so they're out away from the farm. We rent some shop space in Northampton where we process our honey. And I guess I would say to you that and to the audience that the plants that bees prefer to collect nectar from are pretty consistent throughout the area, and for that matter, New England and the Northeast. Mm. Bees are much more particular about the types of plants that they gather nectar and pollen from than people realize.
What's the hardest thing about keeping bee populations healthy?
Well,
and is it harder than keeping children healthy?
Or, you know, other pets? I keep thinking of bees as like one puppy that has, you know, like 5,000 parts and you can't pet very easily.
I guess my answer could apply to both bees and children. I don't know whether benign neglect is better than all the management that we try to do. No, in all seriousness, the health issue of honeybees is multifactorial. It's a fairly complicated issue. One of the big central issues, however, is a parasitic mite that infests honeybee colonies. It jumped from another species of bee, what's referred to as Asian honeybee, to the European honeybee. And its former host tolerates the mites pretty well, but the European honeybees do not. So that's the central issue in terms of health. It's not the only issue, but it's the central issue in terms of keeping your honeybee colonies healthy and alive. So beekeepers really need to monitor their mite levels in their colonies, and if they get too high, do something about it in terms of some sort of treatment to knock the mites back down, or else the colony will eventually succumb from them. You mentioned the word terroir and what honey is like in terms of color and taste, and I brought some samples here with me.
Yay, samples!
You want to try them here in the studio.
Yes. You brought honeycomb too!
Yeah,
we're not going to crack it open.
It's kind of silly to bring a visual prop to a radio interview, but it gives
people
you something
can imagine
to take off on. Yeah.
Most of what honeycomb looks like, but what are some of the benefits of getting and using the whole honeycomb?
Honey that's in a comb, referred to as comb honey, well, it's the least processed form of honey that you can consume, unless, of course, you're keeping your own honeybee colony and you're opening it up and, you know, taking out a piece of comb or sticking your finger in there and tasting the honey. This is the least processed form of honey that you could purchase or to taste. Mm. So it's still in the comb where the honeybees stored it. The waxy surface that you can see is a wax capping. We refer to it as a capping that covers the cells filled with honey. When the bees know that the moisture content is at the right level, they cap it off. So that's the way they store it. Yeah, it's not as versatile product as liquid honey because it's obviously still in the comb. So if you put that in your tea, you're going to have melted wax floating around.
But then you could light it.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, light your tea, flaming tea. So I like to eat it, spreading it on an English muffin or toast or something like that, and then the wax kind of blends in with the bread that you're eating. It's the wax kind of sticks in your teeth a little bit, but it's a really kind of a neat product, I think.
So we're in this cold season, right, where it's like raining out or almost snowing, whatever, and I know that a lot of people really gravitate to honey in terms of the winter season and gift giving, but also in terms of just feeling healthier, whether you're under the weather or not. Can you share a little bit about how people you sell to use your honey?
Well, sure. A lot of people will use it in sort of medicinal purposes as well as a nice sweet treat. Honey is naturally antibiotic, so it not only soothes your throat when you have a sore throat or a cough, but it actually helps cure the infection. As your body breaks down the honey, there's a little bit of antibiotic property that's released, so it actually helps kill the infection. A lot of people swear by it in terms of helping their allergies. What I've read about that is that it's the kind of thing where you have to eat a little bit of honey every day in advance of and during the allergy season. It's not like taking an antihistamine that's going to have an immediate effect. But yeah.
And that leads us to something else, which is that local honey is usually processed differently than the national big brand commercial honey. Can you talk a little bit about the packing of the honey?
Sure. Well, we process it as little as possible, but we use mostly cold processes when we process our honey. So we remove the cappings from the comb, use a centrifuge type of device that spins the honey out of the combs. We then cold strain it and then package it in containers. Low processed honey will granulate in the container, however you're storing it eventually. We will warm our honey gradually and slowly in a controlled way so that it keeps it under a certain temperature when it granulates in the containers we store it in and then package it. Heating to a really high temperature and or pressure filtering the honey will remove some of the distinct flavors of the honey and compromise the nutritional value to some extent. So that's why we try to process it as minimally as possible.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? We're going to come back to talking about the other products that you do, Dick Honor of Red Barn Honey Company. Right now, we're going to taste your honey because I'm selfish and I want to eat honey.
All right, well, let's do it like wine. We'll taste the light honey first. So we produce two seasonal varietals. The light honey that you see here is a spring wildflower is what we call it. So the bees are producing it in the spring in May and June. The other honey is a late summer honey. We call it summer wildflower, and the bees are producing that late August through September. So let's try the light honey first. Let's try to do this without getting it all over your equipment here.
I get to use adjectives I don't use normally during everyday life.
Yeah, well, I want to hear your folks' descriptions and see if it matches what I tell my customers.
It tastes a little green, like early spring flowers. It tastes like apple blossoms.
The kinds of blossoms that bees like to forage on in the spring begin with dandelions and fruit bloom. Then there's black locust, sumac, clover, basswood. Very general rule with honey is darker honeys tend to have a deeper, more robust flavor.
Mm.
But that doesn't tell the whole story. So it's a little bit like maple syrup, right? Darker maple syrup is a little more
robust.
And I love maple syrup too, but to me, maple all tastes like maple. It's either lighter or more robust kind of flavor. Darker honeys can vary quite a bit. It all has to do with the plant source, right? Different plants produce different honeys. Different things blooming around here in May and June than there is in August and September. All right, so let's try the dark honey. I'm shocked we haven't gotten it all over the table.
Shh, you'll ruin the magic. Oh.
I already know that Phil prefers dark honey.
I do too, actually.
I mean, there's just a deeper resonance with the darker for me. I really like the lighter honey too. And there were more notes in that lighter honey than I thought, depending on what part of my mouth was tasting it. But the darker one just is more like a hum.
The darker one tastes like wine and blueberries. There's a richness to it in no small part because it's got some of those like extra fruiting things that like darker flowers in the summer.
So there are some dark honeys. Some of my customers will ask for buckwheat honey, which is very robust. It's kind of earthy and pungent. Frankly, it's personally not my favorite honey, but some people really, really look for it. To me, it's the kind of honey that if you cook with, make a honey cake or something like that, it'd be really nice. But it's very, very strong.
It's because it tastes like grain already. Honey really does taste like the stuff that it was pulled from. So buckwheat honey tastes like earth and grain to me when I have it. So that makes a lot of sense. Honey's not all that you do, and not combs either. You also sell beeswax.
Beeswax is a product that we produce. It's a byproduct of producing the liquid honey. So you end up with these cappings that's mixed in with a little bit of honey, the stuff that the bees use in the hive called propolis, a few dead bees here and there, that kind of thing. So it's a bit of work, but you render the wax, which is essentially putting it in boiling water so that all these things kind of separate and then tapping off the clean wax and then sometimes melting it again and straining it and making candles. So that's been a nice kind of value-added product for us at our retail sales outlets, which are farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Right now we're at the Northampton Winter Farmers Market, which is every other week at the Senior Center in Northampton. And then we sell at the Tuesday Market in Northampton during the spring, summer, and fall, both of which are managed by Grow Food Northampton. So anyway, that's been a nice product that we've added to our array of things that we offer to people. It's a clean burning candle compared to paraffin, which is a petroleum product, and it's beautiful smelling.
So for climate change this holiday season, get your bee wax candles.
There you go. Yeah.
We're talking with Dick Connor of Red Barn Honey Company in Northampton. You mentioned propolis.
Yeah.
It's another thing that you sell, but what is propolis? What do you use it for?
So propolis is a substance that the bees create by gathering resin from the buds of certain types of plants. They mix that with a little bit of wax, and it produces this resinous, sticky substance. It's sticky when it's warm. When it gets very cold, it gets very brittle and hard. And the antibiotic properties of that are even higher than the honey itself. So when a honeybee colony swarms and takes up a new residence, okay, that's how honeybee colonies reproduce, is casting a swarm. When they take up residence in a new space, a hollow tree or something like that, the first thing they do is coat the inside of it with propolis. It's sort of like disinfecting the space that they're going to use for their home. Bees will fill all the cracks and all the empty spaces in the hive with propolis that they're not filling with wax and using for space themselves to move around. So you end up with a lot of this stuff on your equipment, which once in a while it's helpful to clean off just so that you can reuse the equipment. So we will sell that to some of the herbalists in the area that are using that and some of the products that they produce and then sell to folks. Yeah.
I am curious about swarming now.
It's a scary word, right? Swarm. A swarm of bees.
When people mention swarms and they're not beekeepers, there's like running involved and often stings and bad decisions.
So swarming's an interesting phenomena, but beekeepers will often refer to the colony of bees as a superorganism, right? Because they're social insects. They work in a cooperative manner in the hive. So their way of reproducing this superorganism, this colony, creating new colonies of bees, is to swarm. So that's really their goal in the spring, the bees, which is to build up their colony to a larger size and cast off a swarm, meaning that the mated queen leaves with a number of young worker bees, finds a new residence to start a new colony, and they leave behind some queen cells that then hatch. One of them hatches and kills her sisters and stings all the other queen cells in the colony. Then she goes out and mates on mating flights with drones in the area and perpetuates that original colony. Typically, a swarm is pretty docile. There are always exceptions to these rules that beekeepers have. One rule with a swarm is, oh, they're not going to sting you. You really don't need a lot of protection. Well, I've gotten stung many times by collecting swarms, so it does happen. But they're generally not defensive because the swarm no longer has a colony that they're defending. As soon as that swarm leaves the hive, and typically they'll hang in a temporary location for either a number of hours or sometimes a number of days until scout bees that they send out find a suitable space for a new colony. And so when they're hanging there, they're not defensive. They don't really have a colony that they're defending. They're also very young worker bees, and they've engorged with honey when they leave the hive, so that they have some resources with them. So the honeybees have a little bit harder time stinging you because they're filled with honey.
We talked a little bit about what bee life is like in the winter, but for you who are harvesting their product, what is winter like for you outside of the farmers markets that we can see you at?
Yeah, well, winter you're tired because it's been a long season. And still sell at farmers markets, so there are either weekly or every other week sales. We sell to a few other local stores, Cornucopia in Northampton, River Valley Market in East Hampton. We sell a lot to the farms where we keep bees, so I try to prioritize that because we have this mutual relationship with the farmers. So we sell honey, as we mentioned, at Park Hill Orchard, Crimson and Clover Farm, Red Fire Farm. This is the time of year when beekeepers will be making their purchases of bees for next season. We spend a lot of time cleaning and repairing equipment, both the equipment that we use to extract honey. We'll do repairs on that. Yeah, October's very busy because we're trying to do final management tasks before winter, and we're harvesting honey. So harvesting means not only bringing the honey into our shop, but then getting it out of the combs.
So I'm curious, Dick, you're actually doing both. You're selling wholesale, and then you're standing there at a farmer's market for 4 hours. What inspires that on your part?
Well, I like being at farmers markets because I get to interact directly with the customers. So anytime anybody buys something directly from a farmer, that's to the greatest benefit of the farmer.
And the markets you're at all accommodate households who are using SNAP.
That's correct. You know, it's enabled us to establish a brand identity, I think.
Thanks so much, Dick Hunter of Red Barn Honey Company in Northampton, and Phil Corman from CISA, the local food folks. You can find out more about all of our local heroes at buylocalfood.org.
Sure, glad to be here. Thanks.